It's time now for Three Stories You Should Know, our weekly feature that provides two well-informed sports journalists and one public radio host with the opportunity to present a story worthy of, well, of your knowing. My guests this week are Patrick Ruby, contributing editor at Vice Sports, and Nancy Armour. She's a columnist for USA Today. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Great to be here.
Patrick, you, like many people, read the recent New York Times op-ed piece by Dr. Bennett Omalu, who found the evidence of chronic traumatic encephalopathy in NFL veteran Mike Webster's brain. This discovery began what some have termed the attack on football. I'm going to let you take it from there.
Right. So on Monday, earlier this week, Omalu published an op-ed in the New York Times arguing that because of the brain damage risks inherent to football, you know, including that disease CTE, but also a whole spectrum of problems that essentially come from getting hit in the head over and over and over, even if you're wearing a plastic helmet. You know, because of this risk, children should not be allowed to play the sport. You know, that we as a society should treat football the way we treat cigarettes or alcohol or any potentially harmful thing that we know can damage a developing brain, and that we should actually establish an adult age of consent for football. Now, I'm glad you mentioned the war on football, because a lot of people reacted to this as, that's crazy. Football isn't cigarettes. It's not asbestos. It's a wonderful, fun, rugged American game. But what fascinates me about Omalu's argument, if you look at this as a public health issue, we know that getting hit in the head over and over can cause significant brain damage. We know that children's brains are still developing and in some ways are uniquely vulnerable to damage. Now, at the same time, we also know the benefits of football, physical exercise, teamwork, camaraderie, having fun, are benefits that children can get from many other sports. And that includes flag football, by the way. So if you look at the risk versus reward here, I think what Omalu is arguing is actually a no-brainer.
No-brainer, yeah.
Yeah, no pun intended there.
Nancy, what do you think? Does the good doctor's position and Patrick's position, do they strike you as extreme?
You know, I don't think anything in this discussion strikes me as extreme anymore. I don't know if, because this is so ingrained in our society, I don't know if we would be able to put a, you know, an age limit on football. The thing I think that is the most important in all of this is that it is raising awareness. We are having discussions. We're asking the questions. That was the problem with the players 20, 30, even probably 10, 15 years ago, is that they didn't know the risk. They didn't know what could happen to them. If parents decide that, okay, fine, my kid is going to play football, at least they will know what the risks are. I think that's the most important thing, is that everybody has as much information as possible, as much information as we all know right now.
My guess is that the movie coming out on Christmas, Concussion, is going to increase by a great large number the people who are aware of that risk. And the NFL may not be delighted by that, but I think it's going to happen. Nancy, your topic is also football related. What do you got?
Well, three of our reporters, Dan Wolkin, Steve Berkowitz, and Christopher Schnars, they do this a couple times every year. They did a look at compensation, and this time it was for the assistant coaches of the FBS schools, i.e. all of the big schools that are going to be playing for the next month for lots and lots of money and prizes and all that kind of good stuff.
Money and prizes, I love it.
What's for the schools, not for the kids, not for the kids.
No, nothing for the players.
Bowl.
Yes, exactly. This year, nine assistant coaches made over $1 million. Nine. Not head coaches, assistant coaches. In 2009, that number was one. Most were from the SEC, Auburn, LSU, Alabama, big programs. But still, you know, one of the biggest topics that there has been in the last year or so is paying student athletes, covering the full cost of tuition or full cost of attendance. And we have these schools that are crying poor, and yet they're paying assistants. Some schools are paying assistants more than $1 million a year. And if they're paying an assistant that much, you can only imagine what they're paying their head coach.
You don't have to imagine it. You can see it. It's $5 million, $6 million. It's way
exactly.
Up there.
Exactly. Yeah. Often the highest paid state employee.
Almost always.
Yes.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, Nancy, the numbers are very impressive. The salaries are very high, but it's just more evidence that football is king. And this is precisely the other side of the argument that we heard from Patrick. It's going to be a real struggle to get people to think of football in terms of anything other than a very profitable, very attractive business, which it is, especially for those assistant coaches.
Speaking of that profit, I mean, one thing we shouldn't forget here, you know, if you're a coach, if you're an assistant coach, if you're an athletic administrator, you know, damn, it feels good to be a gangster, because the reason there is so much money sloshing around that you have access to in a free market for your services is because the on-field labor force does not have access to that same free market. The players out there that win and lose football games, that in theory and in practice have as much, if not more, value than a lot of these coaches, they're capped. They're capped at a scholarship, maybe a little stipend.
Patrick, I think it was a flashback to the last time we spoke and the time before that. It's not that I don't agree with you, but man, yeah, you make the case, you make it well, and God bless you, you make it often. I would like to talk a little about the U.S. women's team game that was supposed to have taken place in Hawaii on Sunday. It didn't take place because the turf was unsafe, and unsafe in this case is a terrific understatement. We've recently seen women officially welcomed into combat. The military says they're perfectly willing to let women go in the front lines and get shot at. We have yet to see women get the same consideration with regards to soccer fields that men get. Female soccer players, like females in all other lines of work, are underpaid relatively. The men would never have been expected to play on a field like that one in Hawaii. They never even have to play on artificial turf when it's a game of any importance. Maybe that canceled game is a wake-up call and gets people thinking about this issue in the way that the movement to get the World Cup shifted to grass didn't get people thinking about it. They got too caught up in what a wonderful show it was anyway. Nancy, does change along that line seem likely to you?
I hope so. And the women are coming from a real position of power, probably the most, you know, the strongest position that they've had. They are the World Cup champions, and they are by far the most successful program that U.S. soccer has right now. The men lost to Jamaica in the Gold Cup. So this is your marquee program right now. And if the women start standing up and saying, no, we're not going to take this, that's going to be a problem for U.S. soccer. And it's really interesting to see the women recognize this, that they are coming from a position of strength in this bargaining. And you saw it. I mean, U.S. soccer responded very, very quickly and said, okay, yep, we're not going to play the game. We'll cancel it. And from now on, we'll have people come in and assess the fields.
Patrick, what do you think?
I mean, I kind of have two thoughts. You know, first of all, I'd like to think that maybe women players from various countries who, by the way, were complaining vociferously and sued FIFA over the turf fields in the last World Cup, maybe they have a little more leverage right now, too. Maybe it's a good moment for them because FIFA doesn't really need more bad publicity right now.
who would they go to? Who would they address the letter of complaint to?
Who is it either suspended or indicted? I'm not sure.
Exactly.
There has to be an undersecretary to an undersecretary somewhere. But my other thought on this is, and this is what makes me crazy about this story, is like you said, the men play on grass. They would never have to deal with this, which tells us we have grass fields available. This right. shouldn't be hard. Why can't we just play the women on the same grass fields? I don't know. Smarter people than me probably figure this out.
Well, I hope they will figure it out at some point in the near future so we don't see this kind of silliness going forward. My guests for Three Stories You Should Know have been Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports and Nancy Armour of USA Today. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you. Always fun.
Always a pleasure. Thank you much.